Okay, good evening, my name's Peter, I'm an addict.
Hiya, Peter.
Can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah.
Just a bit, okay. Right, I had an opening line there and I've forgotten it now. The feeling, I'm sitting here, I'm sure everybody knows what it's like, but to me, when I was in treatment, a counsellor said, never mistake fear for excitement. It's like there's helium in my chest. It reminds me when I was about sort of ever hit a coke. You know what I mean? That sort of anticipation. But it's also a feeling I had when I was a kid as well. That excitement, that sort of overwhelming sort of Christmas, end of sort of school holidays starting, it's quite, and I'm starting to sort of calm down. Before, I was just sort of petrified. I've sort of been there before, but I'm okay because I'm the warm-up act, so I feel okay. I'm the fluffer, and I have sort of come prepared. I've sort of because this is a thing that I've really wanted to do for ages. I've gone to meetings for years, and one thing I wanted to do when I've done a share is have a little notebook out, get a notebook with a few little notes there, you know, just prepare me. Because I used to do it, I'd bring it with me, but I'd never take it out because I'd be so sort of self-obsessed. And I wish that when I went to meetings as well that I could take notes, because people say so many amazing things and then I forget when I leave. But I don't think it'd be appropriate sort of writing notes when you're in a place with sort of people with experience with police and that's why I have to sort of keep coming back to meetings as well. And one other thing I've got is I'm going to get my clock out. My clock. Because I'm so used to going to meetings where the clock's behind you or it's over there and I'm going to have to keep staring there. And out of a share setting, I find it really easy. I could talk the ears off anyone. I could talk for days about stuff, but in a share setting, I kind of feel like it's like the thing they do at meetings now when they sort of got the 3-minute rule, and you come in and share, and I sort of feel like a very unhealthy Usain Bolt or something about to get off the starting line, and I just feel that I'm under, and I usually forget what I want to say, and it's the same as this. So really what I've got is just a sort of a beginning, a middle and an end, and just because the most important thing is I carry a message of recovery. And the other thing is that about 2 hours ago I was meant to meet a friend of mine, this fellow from America that I met at a meeting last week. A lot of clean time, really nice man, you know. That's the great thing about it. You can just, the way you can connect with people, just walk up and connect with them and that. He's going to be here next week, I'll do a plug, you know, and he's great because I love this sort of, you know, he comes from I was going to say his story, but he's going to do it next week already. He comes from that, but they've got that very basic, you know, I love the old school, and because, you know, I rang up Gary to get, you know, sort him out a share, and Gary said, well, why are you on the phone? Do you mind coming and doing this? And, you know, I've been taught to say no. And I put the phone down. And I was with this guy, Gilbert, and he said, I said, I'd be nice to share. And he said, oh, wow, yeah. And I just started moaning and blah, blah, blah. And he just went, shut up. It's not about you. I said, what's it about? And this is another thing that freaks me out. Ever since I went to treatment, somebody asks you a question. I want you to finish the sentence. What's it about? I think this is a trouble. I'm thinking the newcomer. It's about the newcomer. This is all about the newcomer. So it's the newcomer. And he said, what about the guy with long clean time that's sitting there contemplating suicide and wanting to use? You know what I mean? And that made me feel better, I think. But anyway, so it is about me. That's the reality. It's my obsession, my ego. It is about me. And you know, I sort of calmed down because I spoke to a few people, and it's that, you know, I know I'm like everybody else here. I came here from a place of desperation, and I came here, you know, humility. You know, I came here because I needed help, and I came here because I had a problem with addiction. But you know, since then I've kind of realised there's a problem with addiction, and then there's I'm an addict, but I'm also insane. You know what I mean? I believe that this is a mental illness. I really, you know, I used to find when I used to share my life story, I'd just go on so many tangents. I'd lose myself in it because it just didn't make sense. But if I explained my actions by saying I was insane, I was crazy, because a lot of things I've even done in recovery, it's a kind of insanity. And the reason that I came to NA wasn't because of my addiction, because I knew I was a drug addict for a long time. You know, sometimes I wore it as a badge of honour, but I thought I was going nuts. And, you know, the first thing when I went into a City Roads detox, you know, they had somebody sort of assess you. I said, I think I'm insane. I think I'm crazy. And the woman said to me, no, you're not. Anybody who's sort of insane doesn't say they think they're insane. They sort of think, I think I'm Napoleon or something like that. You know, they don't sort of, you know. But I kind of sort of like, yeah, I understand what she said, but I do feel that this is a mental illness, because to explain things that have happened in my recovery or in my using, I can't put it down just to the drugs or the alcohol. And something that highlights that is, last night I was talking, we both were up late last night, separately, but we're both sort of late, you know, and it might have been the share, but I was watching this program about 2 a.m. called Celebrity Rehab. It's an American, I mean, it's like car crash TV. Literally, the people sort of look like they've been in car crashes. They're sort of all made up. But it was like, and in this program, it opened up and it started off. It had this guy that had been through the treatment center but wanted to get back in. But he was standing on the roof smoking crack while the counselor was trying to talk him down. They got him down, got him in. And as they were searching him, he swallowed an 8-ball of sort of heroin. Then the next guy was this guy who was like a musician, and he'd had so many seizures and strokes from his using. You know, he was like sort of twisted, and his mouth was like that, and he was sort of coming to the end of his treatment time, and he was doing it. He wanted to do exactly the same thing he'd done every time, and like the counselor's trying to speak to me, he's arguing with the counselor, going, argh, argh, sort of arguing like this. I'm okay, you know. She's going, whatever. And then there's this third guy, and he's in a wheelchair. From his use, he's just like sort of from his using, and his girlfriend's come to visit him, and he's just spewing bile at her. He's just cursing her and everything. And the next thing, he's lying on this bed, trying to kick her, because she's sort of going like this, like, you know, why are you kicking? Why, you know, sort of. And the thing is, I've got friends that use that would look at that and say they're insane. It's a mental, you know. I mean, what's that about? You know, I've got friends that use would say, why would anybody take drugs into a treatment centre if they want to stop using? You know, I've got friends that say, why would anybody want to do coke or anything like that again if it gives them a stroke? You know, I've got, you know, and you know, why would friends sort of be abusive? So to me, it is a sort of a mental illness, and also the powerlessness thing. You know, I suffer from that powerlessness over my addiction. And I was reading about that today, and it said, if we were totally powerless, we'd be doomed. It's that kind of powerlessness over, you know, everything. But however, we're not helpless. You know, once you put down the drugs, you sort of towards the, you know, the solution. But I've lived, you know, before I got clean, and in recovery, I live in that illusion of control. It's called sort of like, it's called sort of, there's a speaker, they call it pseudo powerlessness, you know? I'll sort of put my hands up to this, but maybe not for that. So every day I battle with my powerlessness, you know? And every day, you know, I'm doing a sort of step now, step 7, it's all about sort of getting humility, you know? And it's everything with me sort of conditional. You know, when I came into recovery, when I cleaned up, I literally had my hands up, I surrendered. And then the minute I sort of went into a treatment centre, my, you know, sort of, it went down, you know, became conditional, you know, why do I have to do this? Because, you know, I kind of, in my head, I knew better. And another thing is, I really thought it was about the drugs. I didn't want to tell you, but deep down, I really thought it's just about the drugs, you know. The first time I cleaned up in 1984 I went through a concept house, and I had a choice of two things. I had a choice of going to prison or to treatment, and that's what got me into treatment. But it wasn't a 12-step place. It was a concept house where they kind of break you down and then spend the next 2 years building you up. And they broke me down and I left. And when I came out, I was like I said at the beginning, when I, you know, before talking about this overwhelming feeling, I was so overwhelmed with feelings when I left. He said, I didn't even look at the clock. I was so overwhelmed with feelings when I left that that I used again. It's as simple as that. And the second time, I used again for the next 7 years, not wanting to use on a daily basis, and not knowing a way out. And I, you know, it was an angel that came to me to my flat. This guy from America came, had a hit, overdosed, and stayed at my flat. And I didn't realise they'd been 6 months clean before they came, and they'd been in recovery. And he just spoke about recovery, and convinced me to go to the meetings. And that's what got me to the meetings. And when I came to the meetings, I was so broken. I wasn't worried about the God stuff. I wasn't worried about the readings and that. You know, the only one that worried me about was sort of making amends registered. But it was everyone was so happy. Everyone was smiling. And I thought they were doing it for sort of my benefit. And I just sort of came back. The thing about meetings for me is it's about identification. It's about sort of information. I come here for information. That's why I keep coming back, you know what I mean? And I come here to sort of get inspired and sort of, you know, coming here sort of this evening is sort of, it's inspired. This is sort of so overwhelming, this meeting. And whenever I come here, I think, I'm going to come here every week. And that was about a year ago. And to sort of like deal with my powerlessness, you know? For me, you know, say that illusion control, about 2 weeks ago, I got up in the morning, I did my usual OCD addict things, get up, have a coffee, a certain kind of coffee, toast with a certain kind of bread, certain kind of spread, certain kind of marmalade, turned the computer on, got my bits together for the gym, went up to the bedroom, I had this pain that went through my body, and I just knew it was wrong. And I just thought, I didn't know what was going on. And sort of 20 minutes later, I was in a hospital being pumped full of morphine. And stuff, and it ended up as a kidney stone, but it was just, you know, and it was like, it really, you know, I thought, you know, you hear about these people who have these transformational experiences, you know, they think they're going to die, and, you know, the next day everything smells sweeter, everything looks nicer, everything, you know, you're going to change your whole life and stuff like that, and it was like that for about an evening, and the next day when the morphine wore off, it was all back. However, it did get me back to that place of like that humility that you just can't plan. You just got to sort of live that moment, you know, and try. And you know, it's the thing of like, you know, I've been clean for a long time, you know, and it's took me a long time to really take the sort of steps and stuff like that seriously. But you know, two things I've done is I've come back to meetings, I've connected with people, and one thing that I've learned that I'd say to a newcomer or somebody that's been here for years. If you're going through tough times, and I find this period of when you've been around a long time, you go through these tough times, and it's what I was told when I got clean, is you've got to fake it to make it, act as if, you know, because, you know, eventually things will get better. Don't go back the other way to using, because the thing about using, people said to me when I came to meetings, I said, I wanted to know what's going to happen. I wanted to know what's going to happen, what's going to happen to my life, you know, and people said they didn't know what was going to happen if I hung around, but they knew what was going to happen if I used. You know what I mean? It was that simple. And I'll close on the old sort of really. The best thing I heard was something that Yoko Ono said. And this is for me because I've had a tough year. I'll just quickly say it's been the worst year of my life financially, relationship-wise, work-wise, everything like that. But I feel really good inside. And, you know, it's my program. I feel the program. I feel recovery is one thing. Life's another thing. My problem being an egotistical addict, I take life stuff personally. I think it's aimed at me. So, you know, like the thing is it's Yoko Ono said, you know, smile, and one day you'll have something to smile about. And that's me. Stick around, keep coming back. Thank you.